Josh Riddell, a scout from Draft Express, joins me to talk about his scouting philosophies, Pascal Siakam's motor, and Wade Baldwin's athleticism, both from this 2016 rookie class. Then we spend most of our time as we move to potential 2017 NBA draftees, ranging from the top tier to the second round. You're listening to Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. A little note before we get started. Josh was nice enough to come on with me, even though he was a little under the weather. And so a few wonky edits can be heard as I try to eliminate a cough here or there. All right, welcome back to Ode to Odin. This episode is a really special one because we have our first official guest, besides my wife, who I'll classify as a co-host. But we have our first official guest. We have Josh Riddell, who is a college scout and writer for Draft Express. Not to mention, he has a really great email newsletter about the draft and a lot of his scouting thoughts. And maybe the best part, I think, of what you do, Josh, is the Google Doc, the massive Google Doc that you have that, I don't know if it's all your thoughts, it's a ton of your thoughts about tons of players, high school, college, international, obviously the NBA. So thank you so much for coming on, Josh. Did I miss anything? Is there anything else out there that you want to plug or that you kind of have an outlet for?
No, that's it. And I think the Google Doc's great for me because, you know, I watched the college and the NBA, so I was like, I just want to follow these guys throughout the whole career. And I want to see where they started and where they've gone now. So that's kind of what my goal of it is eventually, is, you know, someone like Brandon Ingram or just track them throughout the whole career and figure out when did they add skills, what did they never add, what did we think they were going to add that they never did, kind of just track guys throughout their entire career from college on to the NBA.
Well, that's cool. That's something that I'm going to try to do. Obviously, I've just started this podcast, but one of kind of the ways that I track players isn't like the big board. You know, I don't have some kind of like ladder system, one through, you know, whatever it is, 100 or whatever. I try to do it by tiers. And as the years go by, I'm going to try to follow these guys, like you said, several years into their career at the very minimum to see, you know, where are we wrong? How can I understand these guys a little bit better? What are the kinds of things that translate, that don't translate? Like you said, what are the kind of the skills that they ended up adding or didn't add? Well, before we get more into like your scouting philosophy, what is your background? How did you get into this?
Yeah, well, I had a blog for a while, just doing a lot of college stuff. And I realized that, you know, rather than doing, you know, X's and O's, play-by-play stuff, I just wanted to do more of the prospect and stuff, trying to, you know, start building a team, start trying to find the, especially for me, the undervalued guys. You know, everyone knows the big names, but, you know, when you can find the guys who fall through the cracks and you can get those cheap discounts, those are the guys I'm just as interested in. So that's kind of where I moved to, and then Draft Express picked me up a couple years ago. So I've been doing that for about, I think this is my fourth season now, so it's been a lot of fun.
That's cool. All right, so I just want to jump right into this. Before we get to the 2017 draft, that's kind of what I'm mostly interested in. Fultz, Tatum, Ntilikina are really driving me crazy right now. Like, I can't stop thinking about those guys. But I want to get a little bit of, like, general draft philosophy. Then we'll talk about the 2016 draft class and who you've liked so far. I know it's only a few weeks into the season. But so there's been a report that the new CBA is going to have the same one-and-done rule. The eligibility for international players, I think, is going to be the same. So is there something like, do you like the one and done rule? Does it make sense to you? Would you change it? And if so, like, how would you do that?
No, I don't like it. I get why the NBA teams want it, because you just get another year's worth of information about a guy.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be misses, but it's just easier to say you missed on a guy out of college than it is to say you missed on a guy out of high school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it protects the teams. Obviously, I like to see the players get some more protection. You know, the whole Ben Simmons documentary came out where, you know, that, you know, like, guys like him just don't even need to play in the NCAA, which his case is a little bit special because he himself never really needed to play in the NCAA because he could have just stayed in Australia. But like Brandon Ingram probably could have came to the league last year, but had to stay in college for a year when, you know, he probably didn't need to. He could have been making money in the NBA. So I'd rather them just go to, you know, I like the hybrid idea where you can take a guy out of college, or if he goes to college, he has to stay 2 years. That way you don't have you kind of like let the college game develop, let it have its thing. But if guys just don't want to go there, they don't have to. And I think with the D League developing a lot in the past couple of years since the rule's been implemented, I think that the D League needs to kind of, the D League is going to be that next spot where once it gets fully fleshed out, the NBA is going to say, okay, now we can, if you take a rookie and he's not ready to play in the NBA, you can put him in the D League and, he'll be right in your system. He'll be in your organization, and you can develop him that way rather than just have him sit on the end of the bench or put him in the NBA when he's not ready yet.
Yeah, that's the thing that makes so much sense. There's got to be like other reasonable avenues for these guys besides moving to China or Australia or something, right? Like, I don't know that those are.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a ton of sense for the NBA because it's free development, but it just screws over their future product, which I mean, in the end, they don't really, it doesn't really matter that much to them because they're going to get them eventually. But
Yeah.
I mean, if you just, I'd rather, I'm pro player, so I'd rather just them have all the options that they have, and just if they want to go to the NBA a year early, they can. So.
Yeah. All right, that makes sense. So, something that you hear a lot about on podcasts and writers, like it seems like everybody in the media has some connection with some NBA scout. How many NBA scouts does a team have? Especially how many scouts do they have that are dedicated to the draft?
Yeah, it depends on the team and like how many resources they want to plug into it. But there's a lot of games out there on a night, so not every you can't see everything.
Yeah.
I think most teams have, just from looking on their websites and kind of talking to some people, so anywhere between, 3 to 5 in the U.S. and probably one overseas maybe. And they're mostly regional based too. Like a lot of I see a lot of the same guys, on the East Coast here, doing all the East Coast games, and then you have a guy like in the Midwest and the West. And obviously, they all need to travel across the country to be able to see everyone to kind of compare them, the guys they see nightly, the guys they don't see every night. But you kind of have to split the country just to get coverage over all these guys because there's no way that one or two guys can see everyone
So how
over the.
valuable is going to these games versus just watching the film at your house or, whatever it is with the general manager or whatever, something like that?
Yeah, I always learn more going to games, but at the same time, you kind of have to make sure you don't weigh those games too heavily against games you just watched because there can still be a lot of stuff going on, and you do have a tendency to overrate games that you've been to.
So like, what do you see when you go? Like, you're looking at like body language on the bench kind of stuff, or is there something else that you actually
Yeah,
see during the
I mean,
play?
like you're closer to the action, so you get a better sense for the speed of the game.
Oh, that makes sense.
You get there for warm-ups. You can see guys who maybe they had a bad, they might not be doing well in the game, but you kind of see what they're doing in warm-ups. You kind of see, they all do like trick dunks in the warm-ups. So if like you see someone you didn't know they could jump that high because they haven't been doing it in a game, you can see that in warm-ups. Yeah, and then you can kind of see like how they interact with the ref, the team, kind of, that comes stuff comes kind of secondary. But and then you're just there, like you ha like when you're at home. You're watching it on TV. There's a ton more distractions for me, at least. When I'm at a game, I'm kind of locked into that game. I'm not flipping back and forth between two or three different games. I'm kind of
Yeah.
locked in the game, kind of. I can lock in on a player and watch them all over the court instead of like trying to follow the camera angles. But like I said, at the same time, like I've done it where I've seen guys have career games at games I've been to, and then like I really overrate them, and then they turn out that I just saw the best game, and I
Yeah.
thought the greatest player when really I just saw the best game.
Yeah, so that's something that I try my best to do, but I realize they were all like super biased. How do you try to like stay really even keeled, and are there certain things that you weight more than others, like intentionally? And what are some of the things that often kind of unintentionally were biased towards?
Yeah, I think you just have to like you gotta jot some notes down during a game so that you remember it at the end of the year. But then at the end of the year, you gotta figure out, okay, I really liked him in this game, but was that his best game of the year? Was that his worst game of the year? Like, how did that game fall into the context of his whole season? Even if you watch a guy just on TV once, like you could see a guy blow up in a game, or like he made one play, and you're like, oh, that's like the OG Anunoby play last year, like when he defended Jamal Murray in the tournament, like.
Yeah.
That kind of like blew up his stock, but really that was one of the best games of his season. So now you can't kind of you kind of have to put that perspective and say, okay, that might be a ceiling, and now we're going into this season kind of fresh to kind of like not, you can't let that sway your entire season on him just from that one play last year.
Yeah.
I like this whole season too.
OG is a really good example of something that I struggle with all the time. When I'm looking at these guys and I'm trying to place them in like the tier system that I have, or, you know, whatever, if you have a draft board and you're trying to rank these guys one through whatever, there are guys like Tony Mitchell, what is he, like North Texas State or whatever he was, wherever he played at, just jumps out of the gym. He was, what, it's like 6'8 or 6'9, built, every athletic gift you could possibly want for a basketball player particularly. And then you have somebody like Denzel Valentine, who has almost none of those gifts, right? Besides maybe the length, or at least the height. I don't even know, like, his wingspan isn't even that special, but he has almost every single skill that you could want. So when you're rating these guys, how do you balance the like the really high ceiling guys and that also have a really low floor, and like Pascal Siakam, for example, right, on Toronto, and then the other Toronto rookie, Jakob Poeltl, who has the really low ceiling, at least I think so, but the really high floor because he was already really productive in college.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, honestly, if Tony Mitchell would have panned out, he probably would have been, you know, a starter in the league because he plays on the wing. He can, like you said, he's a super athlete, but like his skill never came. So when I start my scouting process, I always look for athleticism first, because, you know, guys can make it in the league without athleticism, but that's more the exception than the rule.
Yeah.
So you have to be athletic first, but then you got to back it up with some skill. And I think teams kind of, you know, there's a couple years where, you know, they kind of got, some teams got swayed by tons of athletic tools, but no skills. And I think teams are starting to look past that now and say, you know, there's always going to be guys like Marquise Chris last year. Like, he showed some skills, but, you know, not as many as others, but his athleticism is so high that he's still going to go high in the draft.
Yeah.
But then at some point he's going to need to start showing skills, because you can't just get by just with athleticism.
So Chris is an interesting example because he showed skills in flashes, right? He would have a weak side rotation that was amazing, or his jump shot obviously is super smooth, like just pretty natural there, but like his decision making in general was pretty bad, you know? So that seems like somebody where obviously you can see the skill build, but somebody like Pascal Siakam, I don't know, somebody for me that was harder to see potential skill development. Like, when I watch Chris, I can see, okay, he can add a jump shot. Eventually, I think he's going to be able to make a few rudimentary passes on defense. You know, I think he'll be fine. Just his athleticism might take over there. But Siakam is like, I didn't see necessarily the skills that might develop. So when you see a player, how do you say, okay, here are the skills that they can add? You know, like, how do you flesh out their potential? Use Alpha Kaba as an example, somebody whose skills are a little wonky compared to the rest of his game.
Cobb is an interesting guy for me, because last year I would have said that because I could see potential in his game, but I wasn't quite sure how he would fit. Like, you could see, like, if he develops a jumper, if he can, you know, take some more off the dribble, like, he'll be good. But I just wasn't quite sure if he's ever going to be able to do that. And that's why I kind of had him like late second round, like maybe even like not drafted. But this year so far, it's only been like a handful of games, like 10 or so. Mega Lex, but he's looked really good. Like, his shot looks a lot cleaner. Like, he's been taking guys off the dribble. He's been stepping out on defense. And now, like, I think I had him like around 60, probably between 50 and 60 in my big board. And now I'd probably bump him up to like 30th, probably late first round. Like, he's got all the tools, and now you're starting to see like his skill come and his skill develop. And those are the guys, like, you, like last year I would have said, like, I can see where it's coming from. It's not there yet, but I can at least see where it would come from.
Yeah.
A guy like Siakam's interesting because, like you said, you don't really see what he can add. Like, he might be able to add a jump shot, and if he does, he's going to outplay the draft position. But,
yeah,
like, but
that's like the if that you ask about everybody, right? Like, if he could only add a jump shot, of course. Like,
yeah, if he could do this, if he could, you know, step up to the perimeter, if he could step, if he could take someone off the dribble, like, if he could hit someone with the perimeter every now and then, like, he'd be a lot better. But, you know, what he does really well, just like, is play hard. And he's been doing that already this season, and he's been getting minutes early on for the Raptors. And all he really does is he plays hard, he rebounds, he defends, and he just scraps. And, like, you know, he might never improve, and he might just be what he is, but he's probably going to be in the league for a while because of it.
Yeah, I wonder if like you said, it's really just about his rebounding and about his motor. And I wonder if he just fell into like the perfect slot in Toronto, right? Where they needed somebody like that, somebody who was willing to do a bunch of the dirty work because they have skill guys around him, right? And then just, you know, they needed someone like him.
Yeah, and I've always just thought that half of the draft is luck on the player by which team they got developed to, which team they got drafted to, and luck on the team from which players were there at their draft spot.
Yeah.
And when those two things line up, then it's going to be a good draft pick. I mean, when it doesn't line up, that's when things start to fall apart. And that's kind of, you know, is the draft's kind of an exact science because, you know, a team might be the right fit for one player. Like if Siakam goes somewhere else, he might never turn into an NBA player.
Yeah. I mean, if Sullinger doesn't get injured, right, then like he doesn't see those minutes.
Yeah. And like everything just broke right for him. And now like he showed his skill early and he's probably going to be in the league for a while because of it.
One more just general philosophy question. Obviously, you and I have access to these games, like the video, but what are the other really important kinds of information that teams are using? And how heavily do they actually weigh that versus, you know, just the on-court play?
Yeah, I think they just try to get as much information as possible. And you talk to some scouts and you'd just be surprised at what they can find out. Like, they'll talk to, you know, anyone they can find that knows this guy, that knows someone. So they'll figure out like how do they grow up, how's their family life, like things like that.
Scouts are doing this. It's not like some private eye that the Rockets hire or something. It's like NBA scouts that are talking to their parents.
Yeah, they probably. I'm not quite sure who exactly does the talking, but the scouts find out about it. And some of that stuff gets weighed a little bit too heavily. Some of the off court stuff, but I mean, some of it can matter. But you know, they just take as much information as they can. You know, injury history from as far back as they can find, the medical stuff at the combine obviously is a big one.
Yeah.
Kind of how they interact with their coaches in practice, how they interact with the development staff in the college program, kind of, you know, the tutors and the secretaries, even those people too. Like they're trying to find like how they interact with them. And they just like, it's just a fact finding mission for those guys. Like, cause all you can really do is get as much information about guys you can, figure out what matters, try to figure out what matters. Like you don't even know for sure what matters, and then make a decision based on that, and that's all you can really do.
I almost wonder that if a lot of that personality stuff, if I was a scout and I was watching games, that it would really kind of like bias. I might just start liking a kid, you know, and you might start giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, whereas if you didn't know any of the personal stuff, you know, and you could kind of have like a Chinese wall between you and those other guys who have all the, you know, psyche vows or medical history or, you know, personality history, whatever it is. Teams probably already do that. I'm not breaking any new ground here or anything. But all right, let's get to the 2016 draft class. Who are some of the guys that have stuck out to you so far? Maybe overperformed, guys that you liked, guys that, I don't know, that you personally hit on, who like you were high on and are doing well despite their draft.
Yeah, Siakam is one we already talked on that, you know. I didn't have him that highly rated because we said like he is what he is.
Yeah.
But you know, he's already shown what he can do, and I think that he's going to be, you know, around for a while as a role player. And I mean, if the Raptors are good and he's contributing for the Raptors, so I think he can keep playing for good teams.
Yeah.
And keep filling roles where, you know, he's needed. And I think, you know, even though he can't stretch the floor, he can't play the perimeter, you know, he's going to find spots where he can contribute. And another one for me is I was just surprised about how Marquese Chris has been contributing right away. I thought the speed of the game was a little bit too fast for him, and it has been at times. But he's still shown, you know, some flashes of, yeah, okay, this guy, even though he's picked pretty high and didn't really show a whole lot, he's going to be someone who's going to stick around for a while. I'm really interested in his development track just to see what the next steps of his game are. Like, I'm not quite sure eventually where he's going to end up, which is interesting because he could go a number of different ways. But I've been surprised at how he's adjusted to the speed of the game so far.
So that context in Phoenix is something that's really interested me. I think their lineups are like never quite ideal. And I thought that the reverse would happen, right? I thought that Bender would be the one that would contribute right away. I thought that he would be much better on defense than people thought. But Chris is the one who's getting the minutes. I don't know. In that context, I almost think that already they're kind of throwing in the towel and that they're just going for like developmental minutes or something like that. Maybe trying to showcase Bledsoe or Knight, trade him right away. I don't know. I almost feel like they're not going for wins, and they've already kind of just tanked this season with the way that they're playing Chris so much. I don't know. Does that seem fair? Like, Chris his minutes to me still don't seem very deserved.
Yeah, he hasn't been great so far, but I still don't think that they know what to do with Bender. Like, he's probably a five.
Yeah.
They've been trying to play three and the four and just hasn't been going very well. So I just don't know. I just don't think that they know what they have in anyone, and I just don't think that that team's very good anyway.
Yeah, their front office choices, honestly, their head coaching choice. Watson seems like a great guy, and he played for the Thunder, so I have a soft spot for him, but I don't know that that was the best choice. All right.
He might not be the best fit for this team that needs a lot of player development. You know, maybe not the right choice for them.
Yeah. So somebody that I have been really surprised about, I just saw the first couple of Grizzly games, but immediately Wade Baldwin looks as confident as he did at Vanderbilt. I think that his athleticism, if it's possible, is even kind of more showcased because of the spacing. Like at Vanderbilt, gosh, I'm blanking. Who was the center that was the big prospect there before him? I'm blanking. Who was it? He's on Golden State, drafted in the second round.
Oh, Damian Jones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Damian Jones was, I felt like almost every action was run to kind of either fake him on the inside or screen and roll up top. But like, you know, Wade Baldwin, he doesn't have that big guy in the middle because they're playing Randolph on the outside. They're playing Gasol on the outside now. There's so much open. He's a terror on defense. Pairing him with Conley makes so much sense. Like, he looks really, really confident, like really, really good. Have you seen any of Wade so far?
I've seen just a little bit on him early on. And yeah, like I was really high on him coming into the season too. I think I had him sixth on my big board last year, which was one of the highest that I saw, at least, just because, you know, you could see his athleticism. And you think about, you know, the college game is so compact.
Yeah.
And even with the plays he was making in no space was impressive. And I was, you can just see, like, once he gets out into space, he's just going to be, you know, even more unleashed.
Yeah.
And I think he was a guy who people focus more on the negatives than the positives, which he may never get to, like, his super high ceiling.
So what are the negatives? Why did he slide all the way there?
Yeah, I mean, he was a shooter, 40% shooter.
Yeah.
He was never great inside the arc there. I think that was the issue. Like, he could get to the lane. Like, he was always getting to the rim, but he could never finish. So I think that drew a lot of concerns. Like, if you can't finish against college guys.
Yeah, that's true.
Against NBA guys. But, you know, like, guys would just collapse on him, and they could get there so much quicker. Like,
yeah,
in the NBA, he's just going to have some – if he gets a step on a guy, he's going to get to the rim. He's going to get a finish.
Especially, you know, with that, like, seven-whatever wingspan that he has.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the 2017 draft. Let's start out with guys that I have in my top three tiers. All right, so I'm going to give you my top three tiers. I'll go 1, 2, 3, and then you tell me why I'm wrong, okay? Or okay. If I'm not wrong, then we can just agree together and propose a toast or something. I don't know. So, okay. So my tier one, Fultz, obviously he's there. I think he's the best player in the draft. His summer with the USA team was like amazing. I've never seen anybody, I think, at that level dominate like he did. Maybe it was because his team wasn't that great, and so he really stood out. But yeah, he was amazing. And then I have Giles still in my top tier. And also I have Jason Tatum there. A lot of other people don't. Those are my top tier guys. So who do I have wrong in there?
I'm not as high on Tatum as you are, but I can kind of see it. To me, right now, he's more of a mid-range player, which, you know, he's kind of pulling the DeMar DeRozan skill set out on guys, which DeRozan's been killing it this year. But it's not – the question is always, is that sustainable?
Right.
So, you know, he can get to the elbow easily, and he can get a shot off because he's big and he can get there. But how many of those can he make? So he's got to try to figure out – I think I would be higher on him if he shows a three-point shot. Or, you know, if he's able to get to the rim more often and finish.
How does his defense project?
I like him defensively. Like,
you do.
He's obviously a little bit thin still, but he can move. He can move. He's long. He's a guy who can probably bulk up and guard, you know, the three and the four both, which is super valuable.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be that two-way guy. Just like, I kind of want to see where he ends up on the court offensively in terms of where does he get most of the shots from.
Yeah, I like him, I think, just because, like you said, obviously offensively, everybody's going to want him to push him out to the perimeter. And I think that in today's game, he'll have no choice but to do so. So with that kind of skill level, with that kind of coordination, I think that it's a pretty safe bet that he'll be able to add that. And the NBA is like so much more of a skill game than it used to be, you know, and it's trending that way heavily. So I just think somebody like Tatum, who's already showing that kind of skill, that kind of coordination, that kind of footwork at that size. Yeah, I feel like his upside is more than like maybe Dennis Smith, who his jump shot, I don't know, is as projectable as Tatum. So that's my next tier. My next tier is Dennis Smith and Frank Ntilikina, right? The T-Silent.
T-Silent, yeah.
It's just those. Oh, no, excuse me. I have Dennis Smith, Frank Ntilikina, and Josh Jackson. So who do I have wrong there?
No, I think that's about what I have, too. I think I have Jackson a little bit higher. I probably have Jackson higher than Tatum, too. But just because I think that Jackson's a little bit better defensively, and I think his shot, it might come a little bit sooner than Tatum's. But I think I get it with Tatum. Like, he can get his shot off.
Yeah.
And that's being shown that that's a valuable skill. Like, even if it doesn't always go in, if you can get a shot, if you can get a good shot and an open shot, like, that's a valuable skill. And Tatum can create that for himself.
Yeah.
So, but I also like Dennis Smith, too. I saw a lot of Chris Paul comparisons, which I'll have to wait and see on that. But
yeah, that's hefty.
I think, yeah, he's someone who can, like, he can get to his spots so easily. Like, he'll just blow by a guy off the dribble. Like, you just see some of his – I was watching some of his Adidas Nation games. And he just, like, explodes down the court. Like, he's so quick. He'll just get off the ground in a second. But his touch isn't there around the rim. But if he adds that, you know, he's going to be a guy who can pass, and he can shoot, and he can finish at the rim. That's valuable for a point guard. And I think that he'll be the second best point guard in the draft behind Fultz, for sure.
So going back to a point that you kind of made earlier about skills that you see develop or not developed, touch and motor are two things that I kind of think don't get developed later that often. That's kind of why I'm a little bit scared off of Smith, or at least why I don't have him in the top tier. Obviously, he's an amazing athlete, right? But his shot and, like you said, finishing are kind of a problem. And then his defensive motor, he's one of those guys, fake hustle guys, right? Like, he'll jump passing lanes and he'll act really active on the perimeter and stuff. But when it comes to, like, actually locking in, being really smart on the rotations off the ball, he's, like, pretty lazy. And maybe that's just high school stuff. A lot of these guys look lazy in some of these stupid high school games. But are those fair criticisms?
Yeah, a little bit of the Russell Westbrook system, too, or, like, a syndrome, too, where, like, he'll lock in on a guy.
Yeah, exactly.
When he's in the zone and he's feeling it, and he wants to shut his guy down and talk a little trash. But yeah, other than that, when he's off the ball, like, he'll just drift and fade, and it's not always there. Like, he's just looking for steals to get in an open court for a big dunk. But I think, what do you think about, like, I kind of think that you can develop a motor a little bit, like, if you need to. Like, you can just play, you can kind of play harder, you can learn to play harder. Like, touch is a little bit harder to add, especially around the basket. But what do you feel, how do you feel about developing your hands just to become, especially for big men, like, around the basket? Like, we saw, like, Bismack Biyombo had a big problem with that. Like, early on, he could never catch. And now, like, his hands have gotten a little bit better. Like, would you put hands in that same category? Or do you think that they might be a little bit easier to develop for some guys?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, one, I'll say I don't know. Then second, I would say I would have to look at what are the scenarios, what's the context in which these guys who don't have hands develop the hands? Like, Dennis Smith, he's been playing basketball forever, right? You know, he's not a pro yet, but he's been playing for, I don't know, just a conservative estimate, maybe 10 years, right? He's had tons of opportunity to finish at the rim, kind of the natural coordination that some guys have and that some guys don't have. Whereas Bismack Biyombo, he didn't have that kind of track record. He didn't go through AAU, you know, year-round kind of stuff. So I wonder, I don't know, this is just me kind of just talking, but I wonder if those guys, if that's just kind of a thing of, hey, if you don't have a lot of time, we're developing this coordination later. Maybe your ceiling on the coordination is a lot lower than if you had started when you were six, you know, throwing the baseball in the back with your dad or whatever. But I don't know, somebody already who's, Ben Simmons, he's been playing basketball forever. His dad was a professional basketball player year-round, internationally. He can't shoot at all. I don't know. That's like super scary, right? Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like people just develop different skills at different times too. And that's kind of what you have to remember is like some guys are going to, explode early in the league and they're going early in their careers and they're going to like look really good as, you know, juniors in high school and seniors in high school when they're playing the McDonald's All-American game. And then that's kind of where they peak. They never get stronger. They never get bigger. They never work on any other parts of their game, or they probably work on them, but they never add anything.
Yeah.
Whereas other guys figure it out until later. Shooting coach that, you know, finally clicks for them, or they get a developmental coach that, you know, finally teaches them the right footwork that they didn't pick up before. They finally realize like, oh, I can't get by just on my athleticism anymore. I kind of have to like add some footwork to my defensive slides or add some footwork to my drive to the rim to get past guys and finish over NBA defenders. And I can't just dunk over anyone, any 5'8" high school guys in my way. So that's kind of like, everyone's on a different developmental path. And, you know, someone's like Simmons, who's like, if his shot is so broken, it's bad. It's kind of a red flag for me. But, you know, especially early in your career, I kind of think that people are going to add skills that they need to. And if they don't, they don't. But they need at least time to figure it out, I think.
That's a good point. Because, I mean, someone like Markelle Fultz, who is probably not the rule, he's probably the exception. But just, I feel like in this last year, he's so different. Like going back and watching games of his junior year, he's like a completely different player. You know, like, I mean, maybe it's those kind of people who grow late and then finally the coordination starts to catch up with, you know, the added length and that kind of thing. But yeah, those are good points. Definitely to just maybe like stay open to skill development, I think is a good point.
Yeah, I think Fultz grew like 3 inches during high school, which isn't a ton, but even still going from like a 6'1" smaller guy to like a 6'4", like, or whatever he's listed at now, like a big point guard, like sometimes it just takes you a little bit to fill into that frame and figure out, oh, I'm bigger than this guy. Like I'm quicker than him. Like I can do whatever I want. Yeah. And it doesn't click for guys until later.
Okay. So in my third tier, I have De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball. So I think here you're probably going to have some qualms with this one. So why am I wrong with these two guys in tier three?
Yeah. I'm fine. Like, I like Fox. I'm just not a big Lonzo Ball guy. I'm open to the idea of Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Just because, like, obviously everyone knows about his style of playing high school. And, you know, you see these highlight reels and he's pulling up from basically, it feels like half court.
Yeah.
Right away. So, like, and his shot is the, you know, I thought I've seen some bad shot mechanics. But
pretty wonky.
He took it to a whole new level. But I think Lonzo Ball is going to be a guy, like, no matter what he does, almost no matter what he does in college, the NBA team that he goes to is going to define almost his whole career, probably. Because if he goes to a team that's going to ask him to slow it down, that's not going to play to his strengths. But if he goes to a team where he can, you know, take over a bench unit, the bench unit is committed to playing a little bit faster, he's surrounded by some athletic guys, you know, he can push the pace, that's really going to open up his game. So I'm just on a wait and see approach with Lonzo Ball, both with how he plays in a more structured offense in UCLA, and then kind of figure out, you know, what teams are kind of where I project him to be in the draft, and kind of see like if I think he's going to work out or not.
That's a really good point. I am enamored with his preternatural instinct. Like his decision making, I think is probably almost on par with Ben Simmons, the way that he sees things. Some of the passes that he threw, I just thought, like, I was blown away by. And I feel like somebody with that kind of just innate understanding of how everybody's moving, like, he's going to be able to figure out, especially in an NBA where the high pick and roll is everything, right? But to your point, I think it's like really valid. The context is going to be everything for him if he's in a place where he's surrounded by some shooters. Because right now he's kind of like a fake shooter, right? Like, I don't think he's nearly as good as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
But defensively, while at Chino Hills, he didn't play a lot of defense, I saw him kind of turn it on. And with kind of his anticipation and everything, what he might lack in athleticism compared to maybe Josh Jackson, I feel like he makes up for with just, I don't know, I keep saying it, but just the instincts. So anyway, we'll move off of that. Someone else.
Yeah, one more thing on Ball is just like, I've seen, there's obviously can be exceptions to every rule, but like, if all you can really do is pass, you need something else. Like we've seen guys who come in and like, they've got all the passing instincts that they can make every pass. Like they can see the whole flow. They can see guys cutting before the guys even start to cut. So that's why I'm like with Baum, I'm really interested to see what set he's good at in college, whether he can beat guys off the dribble with his handle and draw the collapse of defense, or whether he can run the pick and roll and turn the corner and make decisions off of that. Like if he can do that, then I'm a little bit more interested in his NBA ability. But if he's just gonna push the pace, make a transition pass, that's valuable, but it's not quite as valuable as in terms of running an NBA offense. Like he's got to be able to break guys down on the half court too, and that's kind of what I'll be watching closest with him.
So I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but what about TJ Leaf there with Lonzo Ball? Like all the things that you just said, like in my head, I'm just thinking about the 1-4 pick and roll with TJ Leaf and how that's going to make him look, that's going to kind of showcase what he's really good at. So another guy that I am completely enamored with, especially after watching like FIBA games this summer, Markkanen, he's something else. Like 7-footer off curls, like on the perimeter, like they're literally running actions for him to curl, like to get a shot off of a curl 25 feet off. And I think more athletic than kind of you initially think that he is. And I've also heard that a weakness is going to be like his strength or something like that. But I mean, his shoulders are super broad. Like, I don't know exactly what his weakness is. I think he doesn't play like super above the rim. So defensively, I don't know. Ideally, he should be like a 5 offensively. But defensively, I don't know if he'll ever be able to play the 5 and protect the rim. But everything else, his boxes are checked for me. So like, what are his weaknesses?
Yeah, I think it's defensive position. You know, he's not super long. And like you said, he's not super explosive either. So just like, he's not going to protect the rim. And I don't think he's that quick laterally yet, at least, to be able to, you know, he'll hold his own against centers who play the perimeter, but he's not going to be able to switch out on the pick and roll, move his feet that well. Like, he might be a little bit vulnerable to that, too. So, like, he has all the boxes offensively, but, like, he just has to show what he can do defensively.
Yeah. Okay. The last guy who I could see, or who at least has gotten a lot of buzz lately about getting into kind of this top echelon, like top 3-tier territory, is OG Anunoby, who we kind of talked about a little bit already. There's been a few pieces written about him. Jonathan Tark's The Ringer, your guys at Draft Express, Mike Schmitz and Jonathan Giovanni, they've recently talked about him on like several podcasts. So introduce me to OG, because I have like barely watched any film on him. And the fact that like everybody's coming on so strong makes me like really kind of wary about a sophomore who wasn't getting this kind of hype last year.
Yeah, I think there's definite question marks about him still, but like, and a lot of what we saw from him were just like flashes in like in games. Like he had a couple big games late in the season against some good teams where like you saw him like shut down Jamal Murray and like make some big plays offensively. But he didn't play that much at all last year for Indiana. Like he's playing like less than 10 minutes a game most of the year. So I try to not put him too high, and I kind of fail when I put him number 10. I did buy into his athleticism a little bit.
So what are the skills that like he's going to add to like justify that slot?
Yeah, I think if he adds shot creation, he's going to justify the number 10 spot. If not, then it'll be. And if he shot really well last year, I think he shot over 35% at least, if not higher, from three in a smaller sample. So if he can keep shooting from three, you know, his flow is kind of like a 3-and-D guy because yeah. his defense is so far ahead of his offense right now. So at worst, I think he's a 3-and-D guy who can even guard like he was guarding like 1-4 last year, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And then if he can add like some shot creation off the dribble, like not even like out of the pick and roll to start, but you know, catch and shoot and attack a closeout and get to the rim or get to the elbow, you know, that'll really cement him as like a guy who can be your number 2 offensive weapon and someone who's going to be your top defensive guy too.
So this is like rampant speculation, but let's say Jackson doesn't shoot it well, isn't offensively very productive at Kansas. Do you think OG could like pass him? Is that his ceiling? Like, are we talking top 5?
If he absolutely like explodes offensively and like does everything that you could ask for from a wing, which is shoot, pass, and create, then he could go top 5 just because of his two-way potential. But I still think Jackson's probably going to go ahead of him just because of the work he's already done the work that he's needed to in high school. And OG, like if you give him 1 year, unless he like completely crushes it, I still think Jackson's probably going to go higher just because of what scouts have already seen.
this is really putting you on the spot, but do you know how old he is? Because I know Jackson's a year older than his class, right? So
yeah, Ananobi just turned 19, so he's relatively young for you know, class. So
all right, so let's go on to some like next tier guys, some guys maybe that I right now have in my tier four, which is kind of like a catch-all tier. That's pretty much everybody else until conference play gets going at the NCAA level, and then I start to sort them out a little bit more. But what about Ivan Rabb? I couldn't be lower on Rabb, I think, relative to everybody else. So, like, please explain this to me. I get him as a college player, but as an NBA player, I don't see it at all.
Yeah, I think the first thing is that the Cal team was a mess last year, just from an overall fit perspective. And I think Rabb was the loser in that, if you will.
So the better Jalen does, then like then the more like credit we can give to Rabb, is that the idea?
Yeah, I just don't think that he, like, his skill set didn't really fit with the rest of the team. Like, they just needed a guy who could shoot really well just to surround, you know, Wallace and Brown and those cutters, and Rabb wasn't that guy. So I think his positive heading into the season that he's kind of someone who can be molded into one of two different ways, which is one, you can kind of fill him out and kind of bulk him up. I think he can kind of get to a similar physique as Tristan Thompson, maybe not that big, because Tristan Thompson's like shoulders are huge, but
yeah,
I think
he's super long.
Yeah, I think he can get to someone who can play the five, rebound well, protect the rim a little bit. But then I also think, like, he showed some competency as a jump shooter last year from the mid-range. So they might, you know, a team might pick him, try to stretch him out to, like, the perimeter, try to turn him into pick and roll big, and kind of mold him into that, more of an offensive weapon. You know, I get he wasn't very good last year, but I still think, like, his physical tools are there to give him the chance this year to prove it offensively.
So where do you have him? Like, what's a reasonable expectation for him right now?
I have him at six. I think somewhere I think he's going to be pretty polarized. I think it's going to be a team by team basis.
That's a good point.
Whether he goes high, like, I think top five is a stretch for him, but I think back into the lottery, basically 8 to 15 is probably a good landing spot for him.
Okay, the next guy I'm really curious about, like, I can't wait to see him at FSU, mainly just because I'm a big Bacon guy. I love Bacon's jump shot. Like, I know that statistically he doesn't shoot it that well, but his form, Dwayne Bacon, I just love for some reason. But Jonathan Isaac, somebody who reminds me a lot about how you described Marquise Chris. You see tons of flashes, obviously athletically, length-wise, he checks all those boxes, but there's also a lot of other boxes that he's not even coming close to checking yet. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on Isaac, and where do you see him kind of at the end of the year?
Yeah, he's the biggest boom or bust guy to me right now, both heading into the season and probably even at the end of the season too. Like, he's going to be someone who's going to be, you know, everything that the league wants right now. A 6'11 guy who can shoot, he can handle it a little bit. His game is off the dribble, isn't that advanced, but you can kind of see where he's at least comfortable enough to build around. But he's also someone who's like, he's so skinny.
So skinny.
You just wonder if he can play, if he can, like, how long is it going to take before he can play in the NBA? So he's going to be someone who's another guy, I think, like, he has to go to the right team. And if he doesn't go to the right team, I don't think he's going to do very well. But if he finds a team that, you know, has a good strength program, can really help him mature his body, and if he can, I mean, then he's going to be a 6'1 guy who can shoot, and he can probably play the four, maybe even the five, and that's just, like, what every team wants right now. So
I live in Cincinnati, and so I'm excited to see if I can get my hands on some Xavier tickets. Sumner is, like, really intriguing to me. Somebody that I think fits perfectly into the modern NBA. Someone who I could see, like, top 10 pick, probably. What do you like about him, and what don't you like about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's the Wade Baldwin. He's the Wade Baldwin of this year too. Like, he's so long. He's big. You know, he's so athletic. Like, he had a play last year against Wake Forest. Like, he just took the ball. He rebounded. I think he rebounded it. He dribbled the whole way, and then, like, he threw down this monster dunk with someone. Just, like, you see that. You can see him doing it over NBA guys too.
Yeah.
And he's someone who's, like, he's going to be the guy who scouts say, like, he can't shoot. He can't really finish. But when you can get to the rim when it's open. Like, you don't need to finish over guys. You can just dunk it on a wide open rim.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing for him is, like, I think he's probably a point guard. Well, he's more like the combo guard. Like, he's someone who can kind of bring the ball up, but he doesn't need it. Like, he can work off the ball too. But the biggest thing for him is, like, he passes, but he doesn't always pass it well in terms of, like, getting it to guys in spots where they can create, where they can shoot. So I think he's either got to work on becoming a better shooter to play off the ball, or he's got to work on becoming a better passer to play on the ball and be like, and, you know, get the ball to spots and to guys where they can attack or create.
He seems to me to be somebody who could be that really valuable guard that you can match with any point guard with any skills, right? I feel like his jump shot is going to come. His form, I think, looks great. He shoots it on the way up, which I think is something that so many guys don't do, and makes me think that, like, it's going to work for him. His coordination almost everywhere else makes me think that he's going to add a lot of skills. And defensively, obviously, his potential is, like, through the roof, I think. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to guard threes, but ones and twos probably. So I feel like he's a versatile guy, maybe kind of like what you said about Wade Baldwin, where you can pair him with another one or two, you know, and make things work on a second unit. All right, the last guy that I want to talk about, somebody who I don't really understand why people don't have him in their top 10, is Jared Allen. He seems to me to be somebody that you have a perfect spread pick and roll offense with, where you can space around him. He's going to get up for lobs. His hands aren't that bad. I feel like defensively, he was everywhere over the summer in those FIBA games. I thought probably behind Fultz, he was their best player. The thing that scares me, obviously, is that he's playing at Texas, so who knows what he's going to look like this year, but I feel like he's a top 10 pick right now.
Yeah, I think I'm a little hesitant on him just because, and this isn't really fair, but I think he's similar to Thomas Bryant in terms of, you know, they do a lot of the same things.
Would you say Thomas Bryant?
Yeah. Thomas Bryant's really good offensively out of the pick and roll, so is Jared Allen. And Jared Allen can protect the rim. But, if you can defend the pick and roll, then you're just going to get abused. And I don't think, like, he blocked every shot for the Team USA, but once he had to step out to the perimeter, like, he was lost. And I think teams are gonna see that, and they're just gonna exploit him. And I think that really hurt Thomas Bryant at the beginning of last year, and it might hurt Jared Allen at the beginning of this year if he doesn't improve out of that. Because,
so do you think it was a lateral quickness thing or just like a scheme thing? Like, he's not understanding defense.
A lot of it's footwork. You know, these guys just like stand straight up and expect to be able to recover and block a shot when a guy's by him, and then you have to keep those guys in front of him. They're just not used to keeping smaller guys in front of them. So I think maybe once he gets there and like he's going to play against Texas guards who are really good this year, like he's going to have to try to keep Cohen Roach in front of him every day in practice. And once you have to do that, you're going to figure out quickly that you can't block out when he's by you. So maybe that, if that helps him improve, I mean, if he can improve his pick and roll defense, I think, like you said, he's probably top 10 pick because, you know, he dives hard to the rim on pick and rolls. He'll protect the rim. He's so long.
So that, long. He's got like a 9'3" standing reach or something crazy.
Yeah, he's a center that NBA teams want. So I think that he could be a guy who moves up eventually.
So maybe I'm like overestimating his total athleticism. I just thought like lateral quickness wouldn't be a problem, but I guess I can't really recall any plays that he made on the perimeter. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, and you got to kind of separate like lateral quickness with footwork too, because someone could be really quick laterally, but if they cross their feet over, then they're going to be a step behind.
Yeah, so that's a good point. Or if they have stiff hips.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I'll have to go back and look for that. All right, is there anybody else that you're excited about that we didn't talk about that you're like, Sean, what the heck, man, this guy, we have to talk about this guy, who's not maybe obvious?
Yeah, I think we hit on everyone. I'm kind of interested in terms of upperclassmen coming back. I think I'm one of the, at least from what I've seen, who's higher on Jaron Blossom game than I am Grayson Allen. So I'm interested to see, in terms of upperclassmen, who you think has the highest upside.
That's a good point. I'm like really low on Grayson Allen. I think his handle is like nowhere close. I think he's getting by on a lot of cheap stuff that's not going to work in the NBA.
One of his biggest skills is getting to the line, and I'm just not quite sure if he's going to be able to replicate that in the NBA. Like, is he going to get those? Not only is he going to get the calls, but is he going to be able to put himself in a position where he can even try to get those calls?
Yeah, I think there's going to have to either be more craft or you have to have the athleticism to force guys to foul you. And while Grayson Allen, he looks great on a few of those dunks, especially, you know, I think we remember a little bit too fondly his freshman season on that championship team where he came in and explosive and all that stuff. But like laterally, he's like not that athlete, right? Off one foot. He's great, but I think that's about it. Like the other athleticism qualities, I haven't seen. Yeah,
Jordan... I still like him. I think he'll be able to find a spot in the league in terms of, you know, being a guy off the bench who can come in and kind of, you know, handle a little bit. Like you said, I don't want him to be my point guard. I want him to be my off ball guy.
Yeah.
But you can run him off screens. He can spot up. He can be a guy who can come in and fill it up in, you know, 8 minutes or so, in about 8 to 10 minutes per game, but. That's just not a guy I want to take in the first round.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I completely agree. Well, thank you so much. Like, I really, really appreciate you doing this. And yeah, if you're not subscribed to his newsletter, definitely do so. Like, where can we follow you on Twitter? How do we sign up for the newsletter? Plug yourself.
Yeah, it's at @Joshua_Riddell, RIDDELL. You can find a link to my newsletter probably on my Twitter feed. I think the first one, I think it's going to be 3 days, three times a week, kind of looking. I'll share some of my game notes of games I was at or games I watched. I'll preview some upcoming games. I'll look at some prospects throughout the year, see how they are progressing. So it's going to be a lot of different things. So I'll throw a link up to there on my Twitter feed as well. So most of those will come through email. So if you want it, you probably have to subscribe to it instead of trying to find it on Twitter. So.
All right. And obviously Draft Express, you'll have a ton there. Hopefully maybe later on in the season, you can come on and talk about some of the international prospects. I'm really excited about Doncic. I can't watch enough highlights of Doncic. It seems like these European YouTube highlights, they actually show like defensive possessions, which is pretty cool. But I thought your newsletter for the international guys is really good too. So if you're into that scene, definitely check out that newsletter. And thanks again, Josh. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Rate and review the podcast if you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully there are more interviews to come soon. Of course, you can always follow me on Twitter @OdeToOden. Ask questions there, criticism, feedback, whatever you want. Email me always at odetoodenpodcast@gmail.com. Have a good one.